Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And now, a presentation on the Mental Health News Radio Network. The Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show.
Ryan, that is a freaking awesome question.
You are the power, and you do not need anybody's permission.
He's the only guy that ever crawled out of a grave where people didn't go, oh, ah!
Don't worry, don't be afraid,
ever,
because this is just a ride.
You're a great interviewer. You're one of the best.
If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed.
It is a great honor once again to welcome back to our show legendary economic forecaster, pro-freedom advocate, and brilliant observer of history and human nature, Martin Armstrong. You learn more about Martin by going to his website at armstrongeconomics.com. Martin, happy new year. I know 2024 may be a little bit crazy based on some of your predictions, but I like to start things off on a positive note. Of all the things that you and your supercomputer Socrates have been predicting, is there one distinctive prediction that is actually pretty positive compared to all the darkness we appear to be walking into?
Well, I think you have to understand there is a light at the end of the tunnel. All right. And although, you know, this is becoming the year from political hell, there's so many elections. I mean, it's like everybody joined up for 2024, and no matter where you look, from Russia to Taiwan, I mean, it's not just the U.S. election. Then you have the EU, and it's going everywhere around the world. So this is definitely the year from political hell. But it in the end of this, you know, they know they're losing power.
They use as in the elites behind the people behind the curtain, or the
I mean, this is why they're so desperate, you know, going after Trump and things of this nature. It really shows how unnerving that this whole thing is to them. Rather than reform, they just keep trying to, you know, grind their heel into the ants that they see us to be. You know, it's I mean, there's an easy solution out of this, but it means they lose some power and they don't want to hear that.
The direct democracy?
That's the real problem. They pretend we have a democracy, but we're not asked about anything. You know, Biden signs the executive order to eliminate gas stoves. That's not democracy. It should have been sent to Congress. At least let Congress, you know, hear the pros and cons. Pretty much everything. I mean, war. I mean, honestly, I mean, we have offices around the world. I can tell you the average person in China doesn't want war any more than the American. And the same thing is true in Russia. It's the leaders that always do this. And
they probably have stocks in defense contracts.
Yeah. I mean, I forget his name, but I think the oldest living veteran from World War I said, you know, I think it was 45 million people died. He says we should have just locked all the leaders into a room, give them a gun and let them settle it. You know,
be awesome.
And people don't realize you start promoting war. And they make it sound as if it's a video game or something along those lines. And more civilians die in war than soldiers. They don't ever want to address that. So what is the average person, what do they gain out of this? Absolutely nothing.
No.
A soldier is just lucky if he comes back unharmed. And then when he comes back, he's lucky if his family's still there. It's we get nothing out of this. And it's amazing to me, out of thousands of years, you know, we always end up in the same position.
I guess people can be propagandized. There's a phenomenal book by a gentleman, Chris Hedges, who talks about the realities of war. I highly recommend everyone read it because it really goes in and explores in details exactly what people should be aware of, because they look at it as something cool and wonderful. But, you know, you said it best, you know, families get torn apart and they get completely destroyed. And I feel like all the time, if you look at the news or if you start, they were always being propagandized to hate certain people. And there's this like vicious push for war with Russia based on what your computer sees, based on what Socrates is seeing right now. Is World War III inevitable? Are we going to probably see some type of Lestana type event or false flag event, which triggers the U.S. and the world at large to become engaged in what probably will be the final war?
Most likely, yes. And okay. What you have to understand is the real driving force is economics.
Okay.
There is no way we're coming out of this hole. They've been borrowing year after year since World War II with no intention of ever paying anything back. And that's why, you know, I'm against these people. They think, oh, we'll just go to a gold standard. They don't understand what that even means. You know, you go to a gold standard, that means you can no longer have socialism. You know, you can't spend a deficit. You know, so you're talking about having to change the entire political system. All right. So it's much more than just, oh, let's do, you know, change the money to gold or something like that. That sounds very simplistic. But we're talking about having to actually go through pretty much what Russia and China went through. There they finally came to the realization that Marxism, you know, failed. And we're going through the same thing. Now, this is our version of Marxism. Perpetual deficits and socialism and things of this nature is going to fail.
And when you say fail, is the exclamation point on the failure a point where inflation becomes so high that even basic necessities are people can't even buy it? They did this report. It was kind of interesting. There's a film came out in 1990 called Home Alone, where this kid went to a grocery store. He bought all those groceries and it was $19. And they did the inflation calculation for today, and the same groceries would be $70. So is that the point where America finally realizes, collectively speaking, it doesn't matter where you are, that it has failed when the dollar no longer can provide the basic necessities, when inflation is too high, maybe not necessarily hyperinflation, but to the point where even basic necessities such as toothbrushes, such as basic food, becomes unattainable for the majority of the population?
Well, that's part of it, but that's only a side effect.
Okay.
What you're really looking at here is the inability of government to fund itself. I mean, so this is why there, you know, you had Janet Yellen going after $600 transactions on eBay. And the next words out of her mouth was, well, we're going after the rich. You know, I don't think Elon Musk is selling a bike on eBay for $600, you know. But this is what they keep selling it as, going after the rich. All right. When income tax was put in, they swore nobody was going to have to pay it but the rich. All right. Then World War II came in and said, well, we're giving you Social Security. And the whole New Deal is, so we have to have payroll taxes. You know, and it's just endless. This whole CBDC stuff is basically to eliminate paper money because, you know, you and your wife hired the 16-year-old girl next door to watch the kids while you went out to dinner. Oh, my God, you gave her $20? Where's her taxes? You know, this is the way these people look at it.
Is that the transition? Is that what they're going to look like when they print out so much money? I don't understand why anyone needs to ever be. First of all, I think all taxation is theft, even the basic scale, even if it's one penny. But the fact that they can print money out of thin air, why do people have to pay taxes? And also, if you have all this debt, deficit, where, I mean, do they make that, is that the only way they can make a transition to further communism and Marxism by doing central bank digital currencies? Is that the only way that they can actually see the system continuing, or does the system fail without the central bank digital currency?
Well, it's failing anyhow. So that's okay. That's a solution to try and prevent it, which will not work. Okay. You know, people effectively, they, you know, a lot of people are out there always blaming the Fed. Oh, they can print money. It's not the Fed. All right. It's what you have to understand. It's Congress. It's the debt. Because the debt basically is simply money that pays interest. All right. So the Fed has no control over that. The Fed basically is in charge of the physical paper money, which they're eliminating. You know, but it's such a minimal proportion of the total money supply. It's crazy. And before 1971, you could not borrow against government debt, because they realized, okay, the reason you borrow, because it would be less inflationary, because it wasn't creating money. So therefore, it was illegal for a bank to lend you money on like an e-bond. Now, they basically got rid of all that. So if you want to trade futures, you can, buy T-bills and post it as collateral. So it's, debt is money now. It's just money that pays interest. So, people keep looking at the Federal Reserve. That they are the minority in this whole problem. And I think you have to understand, the last time the Fed broke with the White House was 1951. The Fed had gone along and capped interest rates and agreed to buy bonds if the interest rate exceeded a certain level during World War II, to be patriotic. Then the Korean War was coming, and the Fed, White House wanted them to continue that. And they said, forget it. We're not going to continue this policy. It was basically, talking about quantitative easing back then. And so the Fed broke and refused to go follow and do what the White House said. And Powell just came out, a couple of months ago, the beginning of December. And I mean, I've dealt with central banks from China to the Middle East. And I can tell you, they do not criticize their host government, and they will not criticize each other. All right. And I've been in meetings with the whole boards around the world. All right. When Powell came out and said, he criticized the Biden administration, he said, this spending is, quote, unsustainable. All right. That was like a shot across the bow. All right. That's the first time a central bank has come publicly to criticize the current administration. They don't do that. So when Powell said that, I can tell you, because I talked to all of these central banks, they are scared.
Well, what are they initially scared of? And also, if they are taking money and printing it out of thin air, and debt is being created, who's that debt necessarily owed to? If everyone's drowning in debt, who is it owed to? And could everyone just decide that, look, we're going to cancel the debt?
Well, this is the problem. The Biden administration is a complete disaster. You have these different groups, and they don't coordinate. So you have the climate change people who are only concerned about that, and let's eliminate gas stoves and all this kind of crazy stuff. Then you have the neocons. You have what they call the queen of the neocons, Victoria Nuland. Oh. And she's been, this is not Republican or Democrat. She's been in absolutely every administration except for Trump. Trump fired them. All right. But she's back in there again. And all they want to do is create war. They hate Russia and they hate China. And I think it's largely because it all began that they were against communism. When Khrushchev said, "We will bury you," you know, they said, "Well, we'll show you. We're going to make democracy around the world." But of course, their version of democracy is not democracy; it's totalitarianism. But so, my opinion, I've met some of these people and been in conversations eye to eye. Their thinking process is quite deranged. Honestly thought that if you go into the Middle East, you take out like Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi, and we'll be bringing democracy to the Middle East. And they really thought that the people will give them like a ticker tape parade and say, "Oh, thank you for saving us." You know, and I hear the same nonsense being talked about Russia.
Who's got an 80% approval rating? People are saying exactly.
You know, and the Russians are not stupid. When all this hatred of Russia, what the downside when you start attacking like Putin, it's always they do this in everything. They did that with Saddam Hussein. They demonized the head of state. They did it with Trump. All right. The downside of that is that is then attached to everybody in the country. So it's all Russians. It's not just Putin, you know. When you start down that path, I mean, you had Hillary coming out when Trump won, and everybody that voted for him was a deplorable. You know, you just, you know, insulted half the country. You know, these are dangerous propaganda schemes. And you know, we have to understand that you have these neocons like bashing China over Taiwan. Well, China happens to be, or at least was, I have to check the latest numbers, but the largest holder of U.S. debt. So you're asking, how does this happen? All the defaults in history are when you're running these Ponzi schemes, you're issuing new debt to pay off the old. What it brings it all down is not inflation or something like that. It's when you can no longer sell the new debt to pay off the old.
Okay. When that happens, how do people domestically get impacted? So say, for example, if China no longer acquires any U.S. debt, and say, for example, the Federal Reserve, can it come to a point where the Federal Reserve is no longer able to monetize the amount of debt on there?
Oh, they won't. That's the whole issue.
So what does that mean for people who have dollars? Does that mean that their currency becomes a lot less worth, or do we hit a hyperinflation?
Well, the interest rates are going to go higher.
Okay. Is it hyperinflation too?
The rates actually rise because they can't sell it. So they have to raise the rates. And the Federal Reserve can only control the short-term rate. It doesn't control the long-term. That's what quantitative easing was about. It would go in and buy the long-term excess debt that was in the market to try and reduce that interest rate. So long-term rates, the Fed can only do indirectly.
Yeah.
All right. So that's really what quantitative easing is about. So the problem is that the Fed is independent, all right? And they're not going to just, on a wholesale basis, start buying in all the debt that they can't sell to anybody else. And so that's where this whole thing starts to come apart. And it's also why they need war.
So war kind of what kicks the can down the road. Kick the can down the road also provide these defense industries a way for them to continue to make money until the whole thing goes bust?
Well, they make money, but it's not the majority.
Okay.
The majority of it is that you end up defaulting. And it's the excuse to default. Then they blame the default. Oh, see, it was Putin. When inflation started going up, they were calling it Putin's inflation. You know, this whole inflation started because of COVID. You created shortages, you know, and even Powell, when he was raising rates, he say, came out and actually said, he said, look, and people, you know, just kind of ignore it. But he said, look, raising rates is not going to, one, cure COVID, or two, stop the shortages. You know, people didn't really pay too much attention to that. They do know there are limits. And so by him coming out and saying this is unsustainable, he is talking to the fiscal budget side. All right. Mm-hmm. And that is telling you the Fed is going to be breaking with the White House as they did in 51.
And so if they break and their interest rates go up high, I mean, to the average person, what can the average person expect? Does it mean that they'll just have a lot harder time getting cars, getting houses? Does their currency, dollars that they hold, will they continue to depreciate rapidly in value? Because I know we've talked in the past, some of the people who are really passionate about gold, silver, the people like Peter Schiff, they're always talking about a hyperinflationary event where the dollar becomes completely worthless. There's this big economic calamity. Is that something even remotely close to what, theoretically speaking, could happen? Could we see a place where we do have a hyperinflation event, even for the short term? Or are we just going to see, is it these higher interest rates as results of this reckless fiscal policy going to make it next to impossible to conduct business in terms of houses, in terms of mortgages, in terms of other things?
Yeah, the interest rates will go up. I mean, the likelihood of the United States going into a hyperinflation is about zero. They don't understand. If you look at all the hyperinflationary scenarios, you take Germany, for example, what really set it off was that they couldn't make the reparation payments. And in December 1922, they confiscated 10% of everybody's assets. All right. Then the hyperinflation starts in 23. You know, if they took 10% of everybody's, you know, bank accounts today, that would result in the same thing, that you suddenly wouldn't trust, government for anything. But the hyperinflation was possible because there were alternative currencies to go to. All right. Okay. Today, that's not the case. The United States is probably the best one, the best looking one of the three ugly sisters, as they say. Europe is worse than the United States. Yeah. Japan is still with the negative interest rates and really in a desperate, position. China's not doing so well with its problem. The only one that actually seems to be doing better is actually Russia right now.
Ironic, right?
Even the stupidity of the sanctions that they put on Russia, it just shows how these people don't understand what's going on. When they did that, they didn't realize most of the fertilizer came from Russia. They just don't look.
Yeah.
And then what happened was that they really ended up sending a warning signal to all the other countries. You either do what we say or we're going to remove you from SWIFT. All right. So all of a sudden, what did you end up with? China had its alternative to SWIFT, its chip system, and started moving at light speed to bring it in line. Iran did the same thing. So all they accomplished with the sanctions against Russia was to divide the world economy. So we're not going back to a global economy as we used to have. You've split it, and then you're forcing countries to be part of two systems, or choose one over the other.
Are any of those two systems more, catering towards people who are pro freedom? Are there any particular, or both systems kind of locked down? Is there any benefits of going to one or the other?
Not yet, but okay. There probably will be. When you're looking at the CBDC stuff, I would recommend that you take a look at Nigeria. Most people don't know, but when the neocons basically had Ukraine blow up Nord Stream. For Europe to keep quiet, they promised them a pipeline from Nigeria to replace Russia. All right. So we were paying for this pipeline to go all the way through. Then there was and it was supposed to go through the country of Niger. Then all of a sudden there was a coup there in Niger, and Victoria Nuland hopped on a plane to go over because it was stopping the pipeline. Okay. They promised Nigeria, we're going to, you know, make you the energy source for Europe. And in return, Nigeria was the first country to bring in CBDCs. They created their digital currency. They eliminated cash. And you can look, Google all the articles from there. I mean, people were burning banks and I mean, total civil unrest, a complete disaster. And the excuse that I was told by Europeans, oh, well, the only reason that happened was because they were 60% of a cash society. We're not that big. We're about 15% cash. So they always try to distinguish things. But if you look at what happened in Nigeria when they did that, you're eliminating cash. How are you, you see somebody on the side of a road when you're stopped at a red light, gee, I'm homeless, whatever. How do you give them money? Do you take Visa? I mean, so much which is going to change.
So looking at Nigeria, I mean, does that give you kind of a clear idea that it probably will fail worldwide? Because I look at these cars that are running on batteries, electric cars, and I will never buy one of those. And I know a lot of people won't because, as soon as you have a hurricane, as soon as the power goes out, can't really drive your car. So I do wonder if what you just said about this country and the fact that, electricity can fail and the fact that maybe a lot of people don't want to live under this totalitarian surveillance, the central bank digital currency, does that give you any kind of hope that it will fail worldwide? Or do you think that some countries will be successful implementing it? And if so, which countries do you think are most likely to implement the central bank digital currency?
Well, I think, U.S. is definitely going to try. Europe will probably be more gung-ho on it because they are, Europe has got a much more serious situation with their banks than the United States because they went to negative interest rates in 2014 and left them there for 9 years. And then a bank has to have government bonds as its reserve currency for it to be solvent. So basically the reserves of European banks, they've lost 30 to 40%. As interest rates go up, these bonds are terrible. I mean, that's what happened to SVB Bank in California. They invested long-term and then rates went up and then you lose. But I mean, the whole electric car thing is just complete nonsense. It's more than that, what you're talking about with the hurricanes. In Oslo, it got so cold, electric engines shut down. All the buses that they put in with electric didn't work. This climate change nonsense. There's just no evidence that shows that they're even correct. It's warming from the mid 1800s. So therefore it was the Industrial Revolution. Therefore it must be fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. We're in the middle, we had the mini ice age, which bottomed in the late 1600s. You have letters from John Adams saying the ground was frozen 2 feet deep. We couldn't even grow crops. And that was late 1700s. We didn't start warming up until after 1850. And it had nothing to do with Industrial Revolution. It's just a natural cycle that's been going on for millions of years. We get warm, then we get cold. And we get warm, then we get cold. It's like night and day. That's it.
I remember reading an article on your site about the sunspots, about how that... I guess when the sun heats up, but the climate does actually do change, but not a result of humanity, but a result of the temperatures getting hotter and colder, it does actually affect civilization. And just from what you can see right now, do you see the climate change, the thing that they're pushing out as a means of just like, hey, well, they're going to push this out as a way of trying to push the central bank digital currencies as a means of trying to push for the one world government? Do you think that all these things, like between World War III, between central bank digital currencies, between climate change, they're all part of a collaborative effort to get humanity clamped down on our one world government rule?
Yeah, I mean, it's that's basically what Klaus Schwab has been pushing. And this idea, and even Soros is behind it, you know, no borders, open society, all this nonsense. The UN is the one, you know, they had that big climate change, you know, movement there, and everybody got together. They would not allow anybody that criticized it to even speak. I mean, so much for democracy. But the UN, from day one, it has always had this idea that the way to prevent war is that there would be one government. And look, all you have, if you understand history, look at Rome. I mean, fine, there was one government. How many civil wars did they have? You know,
tons.
It doesn't, one government doesn't solve it. And I've put on a video of the former French president Holland sitting next to Merkel, and they admitted that was exact theory that why they created the EU. To eliminate European wars. And you go over there, and when Merkel was against Germany, they're dressed up as Nazis protesting the Germans, you know. I mean, the memories there go back a long time. I've said before, I was, you know, I had been called in by Yugoslavia, and before everything broke up, and I was meeting with the government. And I got there and they said, oh, well, you know, they killed 600 of us and threw us in a common grave. And I thought I just missed something on the news. I said, really? I said, when did that happen? Oh, about 600-700 years ago. I said, oh, yes, that one. OK. You know, they remember things in Europe for a very, very long time. That's where, I when the EU came to us and they were forming, you know, euro currency, etc. I warned them this was not going to work unless you consolidate all the debts, but they didn't want to do that. And I explained, I said, what made the United States work was discrimination. They said, oh, what do you mean? I said, whoever was the last one off the boat, you didn't get a job until you spoke English. All right. So you ask an American, what are you? And they go, well, I'm half Spanish, half German or Irish and Italian or whatever. I said, once everybody spoke the same language, then intermarriage took place. You don't see somebody from Scotland going down and marrying somebody from Sicily. You know, it's cool. Language is a lot.
Well, speaking of that, I want to just mention something about how people came to America years ago and they were all speaking the same language. Now in the U.S., it seems that there's totally open borders. So from what you see and what Socrates is predicting, do you foresee, or does Socrates foresee, an increase of domestic terror attacks because of that? Or are we going to see massive civil unrest because the culture is changing so dramatically? I think it's one thing if you allow people to come to your country legally and they go through a process and they have to, know your laws. When these people are just kind of coming through the border and they're getting money and they're getting cell phones, they're treated better than veterans and some senior citizens. So because there's so many coming in such a short period of time, what impact do you think that will have, not only on the U.S., but other countries? My understanding is that Ireland is overrun with people that have come in dramatically, has seen an increase in immigrants dramatically. Europe's having a lot of people like that. So where does this all lead, at least for the U.S.?
Well, it's eventually we're looking at separatist movements working. And civil unrest is going to take place. It's going to start rising quite dramatically next year, particularly after these elections. Even when you look at in London, you have a lot of people that came there from India. All right. And Actually, one of the best number one foods in London is Indian food. But they had to be able to speak English. They had to have some sort of a trade. Most of them were, in the medical field, doctors, etc. And they were very resentful of all these Muslims that were just coming in. They didn't have to speak any English, and they didn't have to have a career. That's why Brexit, they voted for Brexit, to stop the onslaught of people coming in. And you have that problem throughout Europe. You go to Sweden, and there's some areas you just can't go to. And they said, oh, Sharia law works here. The old immigrants that came here, they came here for an opportunity. All right. Whereas the immigrants that seem to be coming in the United States and in Europe, they're just bringing their culture with them. So, Germany actually put out a booklet, trying to explain that, don't go touching, German girls. That's not acceptable here. This is what you're looking at. It's really, it's one thing to go to another country and you then absorb that culture. I can't go to Rome and say, okay, fine, no, you can't do this way. I do it this way. And you have to obey the laws in each country. You don't change their law to match what you think should be it. And that's the problem. So, most of the people coming in from South America are just coming for the free lunch, and they are fleeing, basically the collapse of socialism in South America that's taking place. They're coming here.
If they're fleeing that, wouldn't that be a positive thing for the U.S. though? I mean, if they're fleeing communism and they're fleeing socialist policies, I figure that they're coming here for when they want them to say, look, we can't have this. We just flee.
No, it's the opposite. The socialism is dying there. So they're coming here for the free lunch. these people are getting, if you go on Social Security, you get maybe about $1,500 a month to start. They're giving them $2,200.
Ridiculous. I mean, where is this money coming from? I don't understand this whole idea. Like, you
have it's to the be... debt. They just keep making more and more debt. And I can tell you that I've been told from the beginning of this, this is what the Biden will issue an executive order, and he's going to grant these people citizenship. And it's all so they can vote in the 2024 election. It's crazy. This is why our computer is basically showing that the 2024 election is going to be a complete disaster. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, they don't even want to talk about what really happened on January 6th. I have some videos that were sent to me showing me that there were black, guys in all black outfits inside the Capitol, and people were yelling at them that they were in, and no, we're not with them or whatever, and they, by storming into the Capitol building, they were able to use that to stop the confirmation process. Mm-hmm. And then Pelosi came in with emergency rules. There were at least two objections to the count. So once they put in the if even one of them was successful, Biden wouldn't be president. So what happened was, by going to the emergency count, that was it. Mm-hmm. It shut down everything. And it was just certified. That is kind of what they're doing at the WHO right now. They were supposed to have everybody who was going to object or whatever was supposed to be by January 27th. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to be able to meet that deadline. So by May, you're shutting it off. Any objections? In May, they're just going to say, yes, we have this power.
So is this when the World Health Organization is going to decide unilaterally to declare pandemics and all countries are going to have to, what, heed to their will? The Bill Gates funded thing?
Yes. It's there is no enforcement mechanism. All right. But, you know, the Biden administration would say, oh, well, we have no choice. All right. So, I mean, what are they going to do? Send in troops? You know, they don't have any actual ability to force it. What would happen is that they can then say the UN imposes sanctions again. And say, okay, fine, your country will be removed from SWIFT, or we're going to put some sort of sanction on you unless you comply with whatever the WHO directs you to do. That's how it will operate. So all of this is designed. And, you know, the 2020 election was just simply part of it. They had to get rid of Trump. And just look at all these charges against Trump and stuff. I mean, they are desperate, absolutely desperate. You have some of these states trying to remove him from the ballot. That's democracy. If you want to really do it, then defeat him at the polls. That's what should be done. But the people are trying to short circuit that. So. At the end, our computer is showing, I don't care who wins. Neither side is going to accept it.
And I also saw in your computer, too, I'm reading some articles that we're looking at a civil unrest in the U.S., maybe a separation this year. I guess it was one of your target dates was May 7th. And one thing I'm really curious about, Martin, okay, you see, you have a Democratic Party, you have a Republican Party, and Trump. I mean, he never pardoned those people from the January 6th people. They're still rotting away in a prison. And he was one of those individuals that had no problem making an executive order on gun control. And he was one of those people that still allowed this debt to continue. So when people say, okay, well, there's such a dramatic shift between him and Biden. Yeah, I think Trump kind of shoots from the hip. He seems like he's a different type of person. But a lot of these policies seem very similar. I mean, if there was a person, if Ron Paul was in the picture and you had Ron Paul doing things versus like a Biden or something else, I think they would see Ron Paul as a much greater threat to their power because Ron Paul is never changed. He's always been, you know, pro-liberty, pro-freedom. Whereas Trump, I don't necessarily know if he's as committed to those beliefs as people appear him to be. Do you find that based on what Socrates is saying, that the split within the U.S. is coming because they believe in what Trump is doing? Or is it more along the lines of, okay, well, we have part of the country that is very pro-cultural Marxism. They're actually heading towards communism. And you've got another section of the country that's like, you know what? We don't want to engage that kind of activity. We're very liberty. We want to be left alone. Is that the fundamental split? Where do you see it?
Yes. And what you have to understand about Trump is – I was in Washington when Reagan was elected. And that was the first time I heard it. And they were like, oh, my God, we're going to have to train him. And I said, what do you mean you got to train him? Oh, you don't understand. He's a governor. They don't like anybody who's not from Washington. That's why they also don't like RFK. They don't want any outsider. All right. And it's less Republican versus Democrat. There is really a uniparty. And so they would, you know, I'm telling you, I mean, it was like you take the fake dossier that Hillary paid on Trump. OK, who handed it to Comey? It was John McCain to make it look like it was also bipartisan. They don't want anybody from outside of Washington. It's like, you're not going to come here and play in our sandbox. You know, Trump maybe was naive in saying that he's going to drain the swamp or whatever. I don't think he realized the swamp is basically both sides.
Yeah.
You know, so they probably would be more comfortable with Ron Paul because he won't go certain, you know, completely rogue, where I think probably the best ticket would be Trump and RFK. I mean, that would probably really.
They'd have a conflict because Trump was proud of the vaccine and RFK was completely against it. So I don't know if they would ever do it. And also, RFK has got some positives. You
have to realize that maybe Trump has seen the light since then. I mean, but what I'm speaking from a standpoint of is that a ticket with the two of them would drive Washington completely nuts.
It would be a little crazy.
Regardless of what the issues are. You know what I mean? It's just, it's more that they are against any outsider. And I don't care who it is. I mean, that's what I have found, you know, working with Washington and politicians for 40 some years. I mean, that's really it. You don't come and play in our sandbox.
I just have one final question for you, and that is, I love going through your articles, not just the ones about your current times, but the history. I just love how passionate you are about history and how you go through and figure out cycles and when things occur and why certain things happen. And if you can think about some of the articles that you've written and you look at a fundamental paradigm shift in the world, a fundamental one where the kind of the rules were completely thrown out, what cycle do you think that is occurring on? Because we see that the book, The Fourth Turning, was talking about this period of time where we're going to have massive societal upheaval. Is there a particular date that you particularly see where we're going to have a massive global or societal paradigm shift in the U.S.?
Yeah, our computer shows that is 2032. Okay. I mean, going through this, what we're going through right now, I mean, like what they're doing to Trump. Regardless if you're pro-Trump or against Trump, once you do something like this, it becomes a precedent. Okay, so now you can do it against somebody else. So once they have crossed that Rubicon, you're looking at government effectively is losing the confidence of the people. And so more and more people will begin to see this is all becoming completely nuts. And so that's a buildup to 2032. I mean, I would say the next 8 years and is going to be convincing the average person. You know, I mean, you go to Starbucks and you see the younger Generation Z and they just hold up their phone and pay. All right. They'll accept CBDCs.
God, I saw your article about that. I know.
Look, a friend of mine has a grandson who's like 4 years old and he's telling him how to find what he saved on Netflix. they're amazing, you know, but they are growing up with this technology. So to them, it's not a big deal. What are you arguing about? I mean, I was in an airport and there was an older guy before me trying to get his shoes off to go through a thing. And a girl maybe in her, 20s behind me. Oh, God, he doesn't know you have to do that, you know. And I felt like turning around, honey, we didn't have to do this 10 years ago, you know.
No.
That's the problem. You know, things are changing rapidly. And eventually, between here and 2032, the average person is going to see this is not changing for the better. You're going to have less liberty. They're going to control absolutely everything. That's what the CBDCs are about.
Can we escape that? Oh, is that inevitable?
It's inevitable that they're going to try because they have no choice.
Okay.
They can't continue this funding. You're bashing China. And so if China stops buying, who's going to buy it? If you can't sell it, you've got an economic crisis on your hands. Then interest rates go up. That takes down more banks. The whole thing just ends up being, it's one excuse after the other, but it's a set of dominoes. So once you push the first one over, you know, they're all going down.
Yeah. Well, as he said, Mr. Martin Armstrong, thank you so much for joining us again today for another riveting interview. And you're one of the most popular guests that our listeners request on a regular basis. And we love having you. learn more about Martin by going to his website at armstrongeconomics.com. Highly recommend you read his blog. Sign up for the private blog, too. I love those as well. Very fascinating information, Martin. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our unbelievable guest, and special thanks as always to our virtues, Miss Carrie O'Connor, Miss Constance Dallas, and our associate producer, Jenny Lamisa. To learn more about the Out of Limits of Inner Truth, please go to our website at outoflimitsradio.com. And till the next time we meet, my friends, I wish upon you an abundance of peace, love, and beers. Yay! Take good care, and thank you so much for listening.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.